Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Roundtable on this Friday morning. We have a lot to talk about, and we will certainly get to all of that, but we need to introduce the panel first. They've kind of started without you, but that's all right. We'll catch up to date, and they'll bring you, let you know what we've been talking about the last couple of minutes here. David Soares is with us. He is the Albany County District Attorney. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I was just wondering if I could request Shaft before I'm introduced from now on.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Curtis Mayfield, just for me.
Well, instead we played Screaming Orphans. But it's because they're an Irish band, and it's St. Patrick's Day on Sunday, and they're going to be appearing at the GE Theater at Proctor's on tomorrow afternoon.
Awesome.
Yes. Otherwise, Shaft it is. You know it. Aaron Pisidia is with us as well. He is he's Siena College Economics me. Professor. Thank you. Siena College Economics Professor. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. You can tell my dean that I should be a senior something fellow, or other.
Yes. What's your theme music?
Theme music would be If I Should Fall from Grace with God by the Pogues.
Nice.
Jeez, that was more in depth. I feel shallow now.
We're lucky, as always, to have Judith Eng with us, senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, and former EPA regional administrator. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Alan Chartok, good morning.
Hi, Joe.
So Alan's wearing his Block Island sweatshirt today, not Fire Island, but Block Island.
No,
right?
I love Block Island, and I was looking for David's putting up a fist in the air. You like that too over there?
I'm from Rhode Island.
You're a Rhode Island guy.
You're a fellow clam digger today.
Well, it's a great place. It's the sort of common people's Nantucket. Do you know what I mean? It's a wonderful place to be.
By the way, was your impression just sort of like an Italian New Englander? Is that what that was?
This is how we speak. We speak God's English in New England. We don't pronounce the R.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is, we got a lot of this. It's a bad day, so we'll make the best of it and talk about
Boy, it's a bad day.
What's going on, terror attacks in New Zealand, a mosque. It just seems horrific on every level. It's a developing story. The shootings happened during Friday prayers at two mosques in Central Christchurch, New Zealand. The police say that while there were 49 dead, many others seriously injured. The Prime Minister called it one of the country's darkest days. Two explosive devices were found on a vehicle. And there, I believe, a man has been charged with murder and three others have been held. So, at least, assuming that both attacks were by the same perperpetrator, there are people who are in custody. Meanwhile, we know a little bit about the motivation of a man driven by white nationalism and a desire to stoke discord between people across the globe. And then there was the part about, well, we can get to that because it was partly streamed on Facebook as it was happening, which is,
he put a camera on his head and filmed it.
GoPro.
Which is really, awful. I don't, when we have tragedies like this, I don't know exactly what you say other than the horrific nature of what happened.
Yeah, I keep thinking about this president who can't keep his mouth shut and who has been so bad about, trying to blame Muslims for everything. And, we have a worldwide communication system. And there will be people who blame me for blaming the president. I get it. But it certainly can't help when the top official in the United States of America gives aid and sustenance to this kind of thinking. So, this kind of craziness can happen anywhere, but it's really just awful.
And I think it just shakes us to our core when these attacks happen in places of worship and when you've got white nationalists taking credit for it. So it wasn't long ago we saw Charleston, South Carolina, in the African-American church It wasn't long ago that we saw the attack in Pittsburgh at the Tree of Life Synagogue, which I think about that a lot. I mean, ordinary people and families going to worship and being gunned down, and now New Zealand. And this is so much deeper than the need to control guns. And it really goes to what not just President Trump, but Rupert Murdoch's media empire is promoting in all of these countries. And it's just so profoundly sad, and yet it has to be addressed, or in a very substantial way, or these attacks will continue. And when I say addressed, I don't mean just stronger control on guns, but elected officials and multimedia companies like Fox just spewing this hate and this narrative of the other day after day. Unstable people listen to this.
I think one of the most dangerous things that Trump has unleashed isn't his economic policy or environmental policy, which we talk about a lot. It's very openly legitimizing racism, xenophobia, hatred against Muslims. And it's tough to put that back in the bottle, because that really infects the social conscience of a lot of people, along with, you know, support from Fox News, Twitter followers. And boy, that is something really dangerous that he's unleashed.
I'd call it the politics of grievance, and that's where we are right now. And the politics of grievance will always result in anger and frustration, and you couple that with economic policy. And I'm trying to resist the bait of pointing the finger at this president, and I'm trying to look elsewhere for where those opportunities exist, where we can begin engaging in conversation and perhaps change, you know, this what seems to be the direction that our world is going in. But this kind of grievance, it's born out of the unfair economic policies that exist in inextricable economies right now, because it's not just America, it's Europe, it is South America. And now what you're seeing are people who feel left out, and engaging, in the kind of hateful rhetoric that results in, you know, evil acts, blaming someone else.
Hey, sorry about that.
I'm glad it was you for once, Joe.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so to pick up where David left off, when you look at economic policies that have produced stagnant wages, limited economic mobility, it kind of robs people of hope. And this hasn't been going on for a couple of years. It's been going on really since 1980. And those can manifest themselves in very weird ways. And if you look at the history of countries that have experienced prolonged periods of stagnation, you find extreme shifts to the right in politics. And that's kind of at a macro level. But now what you're seeing is this weird manifestation of it happening at an individual level, where people are expressing their dislike of their lot in life by taking it out on what Judith said is the other, whoever the other might be. And
in every space, in every space where this is happening, it gives rise to the strongman politics that we're seeing in this country, in every single space.
And I think what's different, I don't disagree with any of what you've said, but I think what's different is people feel like they've got permission from the highest level of government to act this way. There are so many moments in the Trump presidency that will stay with you forever. And one for me was I tuned into what I thought was going to be the president's live news conference on infrastructure, because I'm really interested in water infrastructure. And I don't know if you remember this. He did a live news conference in Trump Tower with Gary Cohen and others standing by his side, and started to defend what happened in, is it Charlotte? And I mean, we all saw the
Charlottesville,
right? We all saw the people, largely white men, marching with torches, chanting, "Jews will not replace us." And the president said there are good people on both sides.
Watch Gary Cohn's face as soon as Trump says that. It is
and John
remarkable.
Kelly's. Yeah. Although it took those two men a really long time to walk away from Trump. But that corrosive attitude really permeates certain segments of our society and gives people permission to act out is not the right phrase, but, you know, for years we've had economic suffering and economic inequality, but it's different now. Well, and attacking religious places of worship is different.
It's different to the extent that there are different people experiencing it. So let's just be very clear about that traditionally African Americans, if you can go back to, you know, 1960, you can go back to any decade.
Of course.
The highest levels of unemployment, you know, experiencing financial disruption, those are common occurrences in the lives of many Americans. The difference is right now is that you're starting to see a different group beginning to experience that. And then you have a president that is almost giving permission for people to act out on their frustrations.
Right. The stagnation has hit, I mean, it's hit all segments of society, but now it's white men primarily. And I'm not trying to make this seem like there is one economic root of this. To Judith's point, I think that might be perhaps the kindling, but the legitimization of this racial hatred, where, you know, both sides have a point, is just unleashing it.
You know, I've been rather startled, you know, over the last several years, watching people that traditionally would remain silent, you know, offer up, you know, some of the strangest explanations and behave in the strangest way, almost as if, you know, they now have validation to feel the way that they feel,
absolutely,
to talk the way that they talk. I mean, and you see it in various forms, whether it's, you know, interesting bumper stickers on a car or, you know, car tattoos, which I have to say is just an amazing thing, and flags,
you know
very large flags. Out, you know, like flying from their very large
in the center of the back of a truck,
large vehicles, and the fact that you're cloaking nationalism and patriotism, you know, which to me is really a Fox, you know, a phenomena. The fact that you think that you're being a patriot by hating other people, or is just to me, it's amazing.
Well, you know, we heard from John who says, good morning, panel. I'm listening to all of you this morning, and I must say your rhetoric disturbs me. To blame Trump or Fox or the right for this attack suggests that you don't believe people can think for themselves. It's the shooter's fault, no one else. Now, of course, I don't think anybody in this room agrees with this, in that what you've just said, Aaron and David, makes a lot of sense. It's as if people have been given a hall pass to go out and do this now, and to say it's okay because the president does. You know, the president yesterday said something that deserves a lot of
Breitbart.
And he said, what was it? We got another letter.
He said
on
that he has the military and the police and bikers.
And the bikers,
Trump
bikers.
On his side.
And if the Democrats start up with him, they're going to get a fight. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's brown shirt stuff. That's brown shirt stuff.
You know, just to go back to John's letter, you know, I'm not one for waking up in the morning and trying to find someone to blame. But, you know, it's not as if we don't have at least a preliminary understanding of where this individual is coming from, because he seemed to have left a giant manifesto.
75 pages?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, looked towards white nationalism here in our country. And so
we got one letter, you know, David, I'm sorry for interrupting, but saying that that he had referenced Trump at one point.
So what we have is, you know, we have always been a nation that exported hope, and it appears now that we're also exporting, you know, xenophobia
hate.
And hate. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well said.
That's true.
I still want to stay on this, but this was the quote to Breitbart from the president. So here's the thing. It's so terrible what's happening. Trump said, you know, the left plays a tougher game. It's very funny. I actually think that the people on the right are tougher, but they don't play it tougher, okay? I tell you, I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of the bikers for Trump. I have the tough people, but they don't play it tough until they go to a certain point, and then it would be very bad, very bad. But the left plays it cuter and tougher. like with all the nonsense that they do in Congress, with all this investigations, and that's all they want to do is, you know, they do things that are nasty. Republicans never played this.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to tell what world he's living in when you hear him say that.
So there are some on the left who are saying that that is a threat of fascist violence by the president.
Well, it's hard to interpret it otherwise, and he said it to Breitbart. I don't think he would have said it to CNN. I guess he doesn't know that the Breitbart site can be read by anyone.
I want to go back to what Aaron just said because it's fascinating, which is it's tough to know which world he's living in. And that posits a choice. Does he really believe this crap that he's giving out? Or is he just, you know, transactional in that he thinks that's the way to get over? I happen to be one who believes, and this really makes him very dangerous, number two. I don't think it's number one at all.
Well, and I'm troubled by that fact, too, and I agree with you, Alan, because when I look at this man and I hear this man, first of all, I'm embarrassed for the people of Queens, okay? let me just put that out there. I feel for you because I do know that there are some tough people who live in Queens, some good, strong people. This guy is not a representative of that. Anyone who talks about fighting and talks about tough isn't tough. Don Trump has never thrown a punch in his life. What he's done is he's thrown tantrums. And so what I find offensive is a guy who dodges the draft, who's got bone spurs in his foot, who's never
allegedly hit
You know, who has bodyguards. He's a fake tough guy. And this idea that he hangs around with mobsters and all of a sudden he's like, you know, one of them. To me, it's comical. And that's what makes this even more offensive to me.
Well, point of personal privilege. I spent the first 10 years of my life in Queens Village. And the Trump
you're not
family.
A native, but you're not a native.
The Trump family was from Jamaica Estates. Technically Queens.
The other thing about the statement, and I realize this is the least of it, but like you talk about the military and the police. And then bikers for Trump?
And by the way, it's not true because every time there's a gun control thing, all the chiefs of police come out and side with the Democrats.
And it's not like the generals. It's not like the generals are supporting a lot of the Trump policies.
Quitting.
Well,
yeah.
I think he still has bikers for Trump though in his corner.
Yeah, and he can have them.
And I hope they wear helmets. You know,
and speaking of the generals, I mean,
half a minute. Go ahead.
They just announced one of the generals just announced that a troop drawdown from the border, citing that it was a security issue and not a military issue. And so, you know, for a guy who talks about having the generals and the military, that's not true.
All
right.
They all quit his administration.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have we have more letters. We have much more conversation and many more topics to discuss. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enk, and your letters, panel at WAMC.org. You rethinking your theme song?
That one's on the list.
Screaming Orphans, and they're going to be doing an old-fashioned Irish hoolie on tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock, at the GE Theater of Proctors. Screaming Orphans, proctors.org.
Can you do hoolies in New York? Is that legal?
It is now.
Okay. I just want to double-check.
Alan, you have letters?
I do.
And let's go to those. Real quick, while you get those, let me just remind people that David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enk, and Alan Chartok are all here. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org.
And Bill says, Bill from Cooperstown, that is, I'm sure Trump would agree that there are some very good people on both sides of the mosque attack in New Zealand. Once we equivocate on the sick, hate-filled rhetoric on immigration, race, and intolerance, we open doors not only here but around the world. Hate waits in the dark. Trump and his sycophants with their enemies' mentality have effectively turned off the lights. And again, from Bill in Cooperstown. And Bob says, I am not a supporter of capital punishment save for one offense. Hate crimes, and it should be mandatory. Accessories and inciters of hate crime should face long prison terms. Mr. District Attorney, on sentencing?
I believe that anyone who commits atrocities like this should never, ever, ever have the privilege of existing around other people like us.
No question. And I know that, because I once had a big debate with Mario Cuomo on the air. I was just playing the devil's advocate because I don't believe in the death penalty for a lot of reasons. But when he said no one should ever be executed, just as the governor of California said yesterday, I said, how about Adolf Eichmann? And he didn't like that. So I got a telephone call that I had sort of embarrassed him with.
You know, the death penalty is one of those, first of all, I just don't believe in it because of we are a system of, we have flawed human beings in our system. And
yes, that's right.
And you know, a process by which we are taking someone's life, I don't believe, solves much except providing perhaps a feeling of relief for some people. But I don't think as a society, as a civil society, that's, you know, a practice we should be engaged in. But, you know, it is hard when you wake up in the morning and you come across this information and you begin to understand that how terrible this is and how many lives that crimes like this impact. You know, your passions sometimes can get the best of you. So, you know, to me, I want a little bit of distance from this before we begin to talk about what should happen to this individual.
And from a practical perspective, if you had the death penalty on the books, which I don't think we should, it doesn't address the root cause of the problem. And this person in New Zealand likely would have done what he did anyway, with or without a death penalty on the books.
Mm. Well, you know, the thing that occurs to me is there are a lot of reasons not to have a death penalty. The one that David just referenced is probably the best as far as I'm concerned, which is we've been wrong lots of times. And it turns out later that you're wrong. That's unacceptable. On the other hand, isn't there something else we could do to help these people just suffer a little bit more while they were in prison? Put them in a glass cage and spin it around or something.
Well, they could share a cell with Paul Manafort. That would be unpleasant. Roger Stone. Imagine sharing a cell with Roger Stone.
Or maybe have bikers against Trump administer a prison-style beating.
So Michael says, "Dear pal, please discuss the reports of President Trump essentially threatening violence to his opponents." We just did that in a Breitbart interview as reported in today's CNN Online. Right. We just did it. And you are right. It's very frightening because, as I said before, it is brown shirt stuff.
You know, at this point, one would just have to ask, who wants to sign up for anything that this president, you know, is espousing? Like,
Twelve Republican senators.
But everything this man touches turns to absolute crap, and it's like, no good. You've seen this movie before. Mm-hmm. No good comes out of it. So if you're that biker gang, or if you're that, you know, person who thinks that you're, you know, striking a blow for your particular ideology, and you are out there working for Trump and you want to assault, you know, a liberal or a cameraman, you know, it never ends well for you. There is no pardon coming down the road.
Especially if you're in the Trump cabinet.
Yeah, and like he said at one point in time during one of his rallies where he said, you know, I'll pay for your defense.
Yeah, or take him out and beat him up.
Take this guy out, I'll pay for your defense. Right. Like, he won't do that. No, he doesn't do that.
Yeah, and I think there are many good bikers out there, and they just should not have that affiliation.
Yeah, lawyers and doctors and such. Bikers who are...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
And good people who...
Well, who else can afford those?
Well, no, other people
can. Feel efficient.
Well, what's a Harley? Good Lord. What are they called?
Okay, and we're going to get mail. I'm warning you.
What?
Doreen says, CNN reported that the mosque gunman cited Trump in a manifesto he published. The gunman saw Trump as a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose. How scary is that? Doreen from Potown, Poughkeepsie. And Neil said, I never thought I'd see the day when a U.S. president would threaten to unleash brown shirts against the opposition party, as Trump did in his Breitbart interview. Anyone who thinks this fascist will just go quietly if he loses an election is being naive. Well, I think there's something to that. You know, I never thought it could be possible, but I think there is something to that. He's going to yell that the election was rigged and therefore he doesn't have to go.
Well, he's already started that.
Yeah.
Well, he'll be going. He'll be going. And I have no concerns about the transfer of power on our level in terms of our government. I have no doubt about that. However, the disturbance that he will cause in the body politic is what will be troubling. Mm-hmm. The fact that you are now causing such distrust, you know, in citizens, That's the damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've heard from John. Good morning. I'm listening to you all this morning. I must say your rhetoric disturbs me. To blame.
Did we do that?
We did something like it. Not like it, but not it. To blame Trump or Fox or the right for this attack suggests you don't believe people can think for themselves.
No, we did that one.
Okay, I'm sorry, yeah. Joe.
Rejected that analysis.
Yeah, we moved
my,
on.
My deep apologies. My deep apologies. Okay, James says, the New Zealand killer praised Trump's racism. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is ground zero for this worldwide virus, from Jim. And Gina says, I may be jaded, but it seems to me Trump has started all this hate since he's been in office, and things like this spread worldwide. I think a lot of people writing us that.
I think the hate's been there for a lot longer than we may be comfortable enough to.
Yeah.
But it was never in the White House. In recent memory. I mean, you go back 5 presidents?
Yeah. I don't know that. No, this that hate is not. First of all, the idea that you would look to the capital of the United States and you would look to the most important position on planet Earth and have a person occupying that position, espousing the things that he is espousing every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're an American and you love our country and you love, you know, our flag, you're hanging your head right now, and you're waiting until we have an opportunity to make a better decision.
And I want to amend what I said earlier. It's not just Trump. It's also Stephen Miller, who is still with him in the White House.
Yeah, but Trump is the guy
who... The survivor.
Trump is the guy who recruits the Stephen Millers.
Right,
and the other,
a comfortable place for him.
Now, you're going to see this as a bad term, but I don't mean it that way. I mean a ventriloquist dummy who is having the string pulled at the back of his mouth. Otherwise, Miller would be count for nothing unless he was, backed by...
Remember, Miller and Bannon wrote President Trump's inaugural speech, American Carnage.
Mm.
So,
which George W. Bush had the best line.
But
go ahead.
But that just goes to show you, the quality players, the quality of the players that this man has managed to, to bring
elevate
into that environment. I mean, people like that would never have gotten jobs, ever.
I'm sorry, but Hitler did it too. I mean, that's exactly how it worked there. They play to a particular base. The base gets energized. They get the Goebbels and the other guys to come on. This is not unique for the world, but it certainly is something different for this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard from Kevin, our friend Kevin. Our master of all tweets cannot escape responsibility for the carnage in New Zealand. When I woke up and I did my commentary this morning, it was the first thing I said, first thing I could think of.
We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we'll talk about other topics as well. We welcome your letters, and we'll be back right after this.
Are you happy now? my weekend's made.
Thank you, Michael Bowen, for doing that.
Very weekend nice. Is made.
All right. David's theme has been played.
They'll be playing tomorrow doing the Hooli.
That's right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. We have your letters, and then we're going to move on to some other stories. Go, Alan.
Russ says, despite all the hand-wringing, I still see a coalition of people with employer-subsidized health insurance, white evangelicals and nativists, many of whom voted for Trump knowing that he was a shabby individual who will do so again. The Democrats are effectively walling off a majority of single-issue voters. Russ from Manassas.
All right.
Thank you, Russ. And then we heard from Julie, who said, people who suffer from fill-in-the-blank often blame the others. That's true. But let's not forget, this is still a garden-variety gun violence in a country where people own lots of guns, according to the New York Times. Such an extreme tragedy would never have been possible without modern firearms and weak gun laws. Mix hate and racism of any kind you like, add modern firearms and a dose of temporary insanity, and this can and will happen anywhere, especially in America, says Julie of New Hartford.
That's partially true, but that New York Times statistic she quoted also mentioned that New Zealand has had single-digit gun-related deaths every year for the past 20 years or something. You look at countries like Switzerland that have high per capita gun ownerships that have very little gun-related violence. So guns are obviously part of the issue, but there's obviously something deeper where you have countries that have a lot of guns but have almost no gun-related homicides.
And that's New Zealand, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And so John says, another sad day on the planet. The other John that wrote this morning is in denial. It is clear that the last 2 years of Trump's fascist rhetoric and disgusting legitimization of white supremacy spurns these awful things. My concern is not so much the fascist wannabe in the White House. I tremble thinking of any of my fellow Americans supporting this cretin. Maybe St. Patrick will return from the heavens this weekend to get the snakes out of the White House. Peace to you all, and of course to all Muslims around the world who are quaking in light of this attack.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Quite right. Okay, and then we've heard from Bob. Please give us your take. Oh, this is to you, David Soares. Please give us your take on the New York City DA's indictment of Paul Manafort. His attorneys are already arguing double jeopardy and partisan prosecution or persecution. Do you think that the charges will stick?
Absolutely. First of all, Cy Vance and the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is one of the premier prosecutorial agencies on planet Earth. I mean, the work that they do is amazing. And in terms of state prosecutors' offices, you can equate them to the Southern District of the U.S. Attorney's Office, which is one of the more independent, aggressive, agencies mm-hmm. that go out there and engage in wonderful investigations and prosecutions. This is not a double jeopardy issue, because the conduct that Cy Vance is prosecuting, Paul Manafort on are different. It's different conduct than what he was prosecuted federally. So there's a whole host of mortgage fraud prosecutions and allegations here. These are cases that have been investigated thoroughly by that office, and cases that were brought on. They held off, and they were holding them in abeyance in an effort to try to determine what was going to happen on the federal side. And there is a feeling, and rightfully so, that what happened on the federal side was a travesty in terms of accountability. And as a prosecutor, how do you go about prosecuting individuals who engage in the same conduct where there are boatloads of time in terms of a sentence, and then just watch, stand by and watch what's happened? So, I applaud Cy and I applaud his staff, and I'm looking forward to seeing how all of this develops.
And there was a state court decision yesterday that mm-hmm. I think is relevant
here. Very intriguing. You talk about, I mentioned this several months ago, that I don't see how this man continues to be focused with the amount of activity that is surrounding him.
It is interesting,
isn't it?
You're
talking about the House investigations, yeah. which are all, civil. And then you're talking about criminal prosecutions. And you're talking about now a civil case that is allowed to continue, that you will eventually see depositions. And so I just don't think this man can withstand all of the pressures that are mounting against him and his organization. And mind you, we're not done with Bob Mueller and his referrals and his allegations and his report and his cases.
And Congressmember Nadler's information requests. He was really smart. He sent out the subpoenas to, about 180 yeah. people. Mm-hmm. And there was all this bluster out of the White House that they're not going to cooperate. Well, yesterday, Congressmember Nadler said about half the people have responded.
Yeah.
And Nadler's making it easy for them. He said to these people, send me what you already sent
Mueller.
So it's not like you've got to go through all your documents again. It's just like, hit send on the computer. And I think it's very interesting that in short order, half of the people have responded already.
And on my list of the three worst people in the world, which I keep, it's a rolling list, right now, Lindsey Graham is right up there.
Yes,
because
especially yesterday.
The House voted unanimously that the report should be released to the U.S. public, And everybody in the Senate was going to go along with it, except for that one negative vote, which stopped it cold, and that was from Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, Mr. Primary Lindsey Graham, because the primary Lindsey Graham is a different character than the Lindsey Graham that I think we've all grown and have been accustomed to. This is a man who is in fear for his political life, and has demonstrated that he is willing to kowtow and to abandon every bit of principle. Mm-hmm. So this isn't offensive to me. Him renewing calls for Hillary Clinton, that doesn't offend me. What offended me was this man who stood by and buried who he considered his mentor, and the very next week stood by and watched this president insult that very man he called his mentor. That, to me, is Lindsey Graham no longer exists in my eyes. He has no credibility. He will never be able to restore himself to the image that I once had of him, because I disagreed with him, but I still respected him.
Right, but just for the few who might not follow your allusion, it's John McCain.
John McCain.
Yes, okay.
So Lindsey Graham is now in Mitch McConnell territory for you, Alan. Top three?
Well, no, I think McConnell goes off this week.
The very top
is the president, of course. Okay. It does change because there's only three spots.
So they cycle in and out.
Yeah. So
it's always the president, and this week we've got Lindsey.
Yeah.
And who else?
I don't know.
You don't like Paul Ryan still?
No, he's a wimp.
But you know, all of this just kind
what
of...
What is he doing, Paul Ryan?
He was being criticized by the president yesterday for not having defended him enough.
But you know, the Trump presidency has really exposed a lot of the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, where prior to Trump, it was, okay, we're against deficits, we're against, you know, large-scale government funding, we're against...
Women being equal.
Sure, expanding entitlement programs, and it's like, okay, I disagree with those. I understand where they're coming from. But now you just see people abandoning all principles. And it's for naked self-interest. And these are supposed to be our elected representatives who are public servants. And it's just exposing the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, where they're essentially at this point saying, they're not saying it, but going back to what David said, you see through their actions just how spineless and what a lack of principle they have.
Well, the Republican Party is like my wife when we go shop.
Right?
Oh boy,
you're going to be on the couch tonight.
You know, if I look at something, she sees it, she looks at the content, looks at the price. She becomes like a super duper fiscal auditor, right? When it comes to her stuff, she forgets math.
Oh boy,
you have done it. The Republicans have forgotten math.
Now you have done it.
In 2016, once that election took place, there was no more fiscal, war hawks. Deficit, what is that?
Right. Trump's budget, which came out earlier this week, is projected to increase deficits to over 5% of GDP for the next 10 years. Yeah. So,
And this is going to get so much worse because, you mentioned one of my colleagues in Cyrus Vance in Manhattan. But let's not forget that the AG is also beginning to look at some of the handlings of the Trump world, especially
the foundation.
The foundation, and whether or not those are in fact a legitimate charitable organization. So you've got, the postman is delivering a lot of subpoenas in a lot of different directions involving this world. They are embroiled in chaos right now.
Back to the letters.
Okay, we heard from Marianne, PhD, who is a New Zealander, and she wrote a very long letter, which I'm not going to read under the existing rules, but I will read you the last paragraph. Make what you can out of it. Okay. We are not chosen for this act of violence because we condone racism, because we're an enclave for extremism. We were chosen for the very fact that we are none of these things, because we represent diversity, kindness, compassion, a home for those that share our values, a refuge for those who need it. And those values, I can assure you, will not and cannot be shaken by this attack. Mm. And that's from Jacinda, PhD. Oh, no, it's from Marianne, PhD. Sorry about that. Patricia says, I didn't think I could admire David Soares more than I do already. And then I just heard his eloquent statement of a very complex intellectual and emotional as well as legal issue. My admiration and respect for him just moved into the stratosphere. Thank you, Mr. Soares, and thank you, WAMC, for providing the opportunity for these ideas and opinions to be expressed. The roundtable is fabulous. And that's from Patricia in East Arlington, Vermont.
I think we can chalk that up to the Shaft theme song playing.
That was wonderful.
That got you going.
I'm going to bed right after the show.
Wait! Your head is just expanding. Oh, it's going to explode. Okay.
I think whatever props you got for that, you lost on the wife shopping story. But okay.
Oh boy.
This letter. You're going to get a letter when you get home tonight. Yeah, right.
Oh, don't read
you out might loud. Want to go to bed now.
Yeah. Don't read out loud any letters from Stacy.
Okay. Hi, panel. Does anyone know if Trump has expressed his condolence to the people of New Zealand?
Yes, he has.
In the past, every president we ever have would have done that. Has Trump? Yes. Thanks for all you do. And that's from Tara. Okay. And then we heard from Roger in Albany. When discussing hate in and around the White House, don't forget the rabid Republicans recruited to bang on the doors of the vote counters during the famous hanging Chad incident of the Bush-Gore election. That's not bad. Gore. Bush-Gore election recount. Hate in the White House didn't start with Trump. You know, I was thinking about that election just the other day, and I was thinking about Gore not really contesting the way many of us would have liked him to do, and just sort of having eaten the result. And to this day, I can't figure that out. There must have been something else going on.
Well, I think Gore didn't want a divided nation. I think he was putting what he thought was national unity and getting on with things above his own interest in serving. I mean, I disagree strongly with the way he handled that, but I think it came from a good place.
But we don't know his motives, and I have to say, I was terribly disappointed. I know that that's one. Your explanation is one, but I was terribly disappointed in him then and now. So whatever I can tell you, I think he did a magnificent job on the environment, but. You know, I had real questions about that. And Dale says, the world is full of good, caring people. But unfortunately, it's the bad who get the attention. Something I always tell my son when he sees or hears about bad things happening in the world, fear not the evil, because the good will always prevail.
And that's a message that I think we need to hear over and over and over, especially on the heels of something like
that. But
is
it true?
It is true. It is true. You know, we are living in an environment right now where people are short with one another. But you know what? You know, if you look at the history of our nation, we've been through so much worse, and our ideals and our purpose continue to overshadow, you know, those what I would call temporary, fluctuations in civility.
And then we heard from Joseph, who said, "Good morning, panel. Judith just mentioned the death penalty." In reference to New Zealand attack, would not get to the root of the problem. How prescient of her, and how sad that we do not apply these same principles to our own mass killing by young white men. Here in the USA, we blame the instrument of death, and no one seems to look at the why our white men are so intent on killing large numbers of their classmates and fellow humans. That, in capital letters, is the question and the problem, not the stupid gun. Do we have time for one more, Joe?
One more.
Okay. And here we go from Mark in Columbia County. The last time Trump started amping up his base with violent innuendo, a Make America Great Again supporter living in a windowless van started sending pipe bombs to Democratic politicians and journalists. And it seems everyone has forgotten this with a daily tirade of lies and outlandish actions emanating from the White House. What is his cops, military, and or biker supporters now carry, as what it says is, but it must be, now carry out some sort of violent attack? Who stands up to this man? Where are the patriots in Congress with the guts to face this man? I fear there are none save for a freshman senator from the Bronx.
And the van was plastered with Trump Pence posters. That was
guy. And anti many of the people who received the...
Right, the pipe bombs.
Yeah. I just
want to say that question about who's the man who's going to be standing up to this guy. The answer is that she's already there.
Right.
Her name is Nancy Pelosi.
All right, it's time to go to Ray Graff and news, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Ank, and Alan Chartok.
We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Alan has some letters, and then we'll try to move on to some other topics. I've been trying since Tuesday to talk about Brexit, and we have never gotten to it, so hopefully we do today.
Oh, jeez.
Good morning, says Bill, who ends his letter saying good day. That's G apostrophe morn. Good morning.
And good, day.
Good day. I believe that you misspoke when you stated that Trump has never thrown a punch in his life. As a child, he reportedly punched his music teacher. And he was expelled from that school as a result. Who punches a music teacher?
Wow.
Question mark, three exclamation marks, and sad in capital letters.
I think
and
David
signed, good day.
I think David might have punched a music teacher if they didn't play Shaft when he walked in the classroom.
I just feel bad for the people of Queens. Your man struck a teacher, a music teacher. That's his claim to fame.
And in my case, Mr. Steiker, who was my best teacher ever, who I loved, who was long past, if you were playing in the orchestra and in the orchestra room and you hit a bad note, he'd come over and kick in the shins. So it was quite different.
Wow.
Violence.
That's why my shins will never be the same. Alan, allow yourself a fourth bad person on your list. Make it Alan's Mount Rushmore for the bad. Tom from Oneonta. Yeah, but you'd have to change it every day. On Trump's most recent violent rhetoric, my people are tougher. This is not coded. This is a direct threat of violence by the President of the United States against the political opposition. It's not loose talk. It's wake up and pay attention talk. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of talk you hear from a mob boss of a dictator. This is the expression of a thug. And that's Jim from Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Lucky door, Jim. By the way, I appreciate the roundtable panel. Thanks for all you do.
It'll be interesting to see how Democrats respond to that, if they amp their game up to essentially to call his bluff.
Well,
if indeed he is bluffing,
it'll be interesting to see Pelosi what she says to something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, high panel, can you please remind Mr. Soares that he will be sent to O'Shack Hennessy office if he is critical of his wife's shopping habits? Love your Friday panel, and that's from Kevin. Well. Get the couch ready.
Go Shag Hennessy.
Okay, here we go. I know I've been in that territory too, David. You're not alone. But they do listen and they do remember. That's what it is.
Hopefully she's not today.
Somebody will tell her. That's what always
someone
happens.
Someone snitch.
Somebody will tell her.
I've already texted her.
Tom from Gloversville, where nobody goes barehanded, writes, panel, good morning. Is Lindsay auditioning for a VP? What else can explain his belly-up posturing? Tom in Gloversville. No, I think Lindsay is afraid of a primary. He's got
right.
a primary.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Is that simple?
Yeah.
Same with the guy. Is it Cory Gardner from Colorado?
From Colorado.
And then the other senator,
yeah.
Tillis, who wrote a
Tillis.
Compelling op-ed in the Washington Post.
Like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, and
that
then
must
flipped.
Have been,
yeah.
That must
how
have been
embarrassing.
Some, that must have been some phone call he got.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting are the
where's
three
your
senators,
honor, dude?
The three senators who visited with Trump and apparently interrupted his dinner to try to discuss, you know, with him this whole vote, trying to offer him an alternative, and the fact that he just thought that he was in the strongest position possible and turned them down. And that was, you know, Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham and I think it was Mike Lee from Utah.
But, you know, the great thing about this is you just know they all hate his guts.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know it.
Yeah.
And that, they, you know, that their self-worth and self-reflection is got to be so damaged for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm reminded of the former Senator Jeff Flake, who spoke out so forcefully, who wrote a book, and then folded 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Certainly on, he voted for Kavanaugh after getting
well,
the delay.
And yeah.
And he'd always, like, make these strong statements, and then he would vote the wrong way. I mean.
Well, I think that's why he was given the last name.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aptly named Jeff Flake.
But I think these guys, you underestimate their basic Republican principles, which is that there shouldn't be rules imposed on this country, and that anything should go economically, and that they really want these Supreme Court justices.
Right.
They don't want Trump.
Right.
They don't like Trump.
Right. But it's the vessel to get the judges.
Yeah. Sirs and ma'ams. After a 20-year military... As a 20-year military veteran, I want to thank you for all you do on your program. You help revitalize my positivity on dark days like today. You are true patriots and personify what is great in America, and that's from Chris.
That's wonderful.
Quite a testimonial. We ought to blow that up, Joe, and frame it for your service.
Put it over here, yeah. All right.
That's all I got.
Excellent.
I got no more.
Then let's go to other topics. Let's talk about Brexit. Well, what's going to happen? I don't know.
No one knows.
And it's been a very tumultuous week for the United Kingdom, and a lot going on, obviously, as votes have taken place. Of course, the deadline is just days away, and the Parliament votes to delay Brexit, but not to control it. And meanwhile, once again, Theresa May was able to, by just two votes, fend off a political, losing her title,
her office.
And then she also failed to get control of the process and sort of be in control of what happens next in this ongoing Brexit fight.
See, when you get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, as I do sometimes, 2:30, and you're listening to the beep, all is explained. And they had this guy on this morning who was terrific, from some think tank, and basically he said they're going to get a year's extension, which is going to drive everybody out of their minds. But it's the only thing they can really do. Mm-hmm. And then he said, he would expect, I think based on sources, that the EU will say to them, okay, we'll give you this year, but that's it. You get 1 year, and after that it's not going to be year by year by year by year.
I mean, England is the world's fifth largest economy, so it doesn't matter how long...
Wait, you just said England is the world's largest economy?
Fifth.
Oh, fifth.
Fifth largest. Yes.
See, that's what happens.
So no matter how much time they have, no matter how well organized the exit plan is, if it does go through, it's going to be disorderly. You've had decades of integration, both in terms of free movement of labor, free movement of capital, free movement of goods and services, the integration of trade laws, all of these things. So no matter how much time the UK gets, it's going to be damaging to not only the British economy, but the European economy, the U.S. economy, and the world economy. So if you look at the long-term estimates, and there's a range, a nice study that was done that looked at all of the different forecasts of what would happen if there were these different scenarios. There's the hard exit, which is just leaving the EU entirely, the soft exit, which is kind of picking these a la carte options they want to keep, and then the middle ground, which is just leaving the customs union. The estimates range between 5 to 15% decrease in growth in England or the United Kingdom, and that's huge. And that ignores whatever the short-term disruption is, because nobody can predict that.
And to the other countries, like they had on the Beeb this morning, they had the biggest onion exporter from, I guess, Holland.
Let's just be clear. This isn't happening. This is not happening.
What's happening?
The Brexit. It's just not going to happen. You know, this was an irrational, vote that took place, in the midst of having, England's version of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. There,
so what should they do?
They're going to prolong this until there is a change in leadership, and then they will renegotiate the terms that they will continue to stay in the EU. That's the bottom line. If you're going to break up, this is the longest breakup ever, right? And the economies and everything within the EU is so inextricably intertwined that it's not like just going over and picking up your CDs that you left behind.
Right.
So what's the problem here?
Well, the problem is I do believe
you're
having buyer's remorse.
Well, I think they're between a rock and a hard place. The rock and a hard place is, I could sing Hail Britannia for you, but you wouldn't like it.
Played on the banjo?
Yeah, I could. And this is the old way of, we don't want to give that sovereignty up. But effectively we have. And now they realize you're done. You're cooked.
Yeah. I mean, there are, I mean, you can look at the integration of the European Union two ways. You can look at this as just an easier way to manage an increasing globalized economy that makes, tariff and tax laws and policies and movements of capital and labor a lot more efficient. And that was largely the argument for this to begin with. And or you can look at it as the sovereignty issue, is that there's this, I don't want to say unaccountable body, but, a European government that holds sway over individual countries. And like David said, I think this is just, the reaction to the British reaction to Donald, or the British version of Donald Trump, which is,
Nigel. What's that guy's last name?
I don't remember.
Wasn't his name Boris? Wasn't it Boris?
I'm running. We're going to get 45 people here.
The point is that, economic concerns did not drive this decision.
Right.
It was, issues of immigration,
white nationalism,
racism, xenophobia, you name it.
And
it was not economics.
And history. History. We want our country. We want to be, the place we've always been.
And I think that as more evidence comes out about the disruption to not only the British, the European, the U.S., and the world economy, that, again, getting back to David's point, that the longer this goes on, I'd be willing to agree with him that the less likely it is that you will see
Brexit. So what happens if the unthinkable happens, which is nobody moves and Brexit comes upon us in a couple of days and they leave? What's the consequences?
That is anybody's guess, because you've probably had companies who have supply chains the British economy, probably already pulling out. So they're just going to pull out en masse. There's going to be massive capital flight out of British financial institutions. Whether there's riots in the streets or not, I mean, it is going to send the British economy into a tailspin.
And London is such an economic center now.
Right.
I mean, all the big banks are in London. You see the skyscrapers going up almost monthly.
Yeah, so
it'll just take a hit.
And I do believe it's those people that have, at least for now, have been able to maintain status quo, because you have the populist politicians that are out there rambling and causing this stir, but then you have the economic, industries that are in the background having to probably, calling these people every day and saying, are you crazy?
Right. Now, I don't mean to sound Pollyanna-ish, but there was a vote.
Or Susan Collin-ish.
Who voted the right way. On the emergency funding. But, there was a vote. The people of Britain did vote to exit, as ill-advised as that was. So,
and then they voted in Parliament, I think yesterday, not to have a second vote.
Doesn't that seem, maybe I'm, again, Pollyannish, but doesn't that seem inevitable, a second vote? I think so.
It has to happen if they're not going to
eventually.
Yeah, and there is, a case to be made that they are a modern democracy and they voted and, we voted for Trump. I don't like it, but I think it was
17 letters on the way saying we didn't vote for Trump.
Here we go. I know he didn't get the popular vote.
Yeah.
Right.
Hold your letters.
But unless there's another vote, I think this has to proceed. And, you've got this guy, Nigel Farage, who's President Trump's buddy, just fanning the flames. And he's actually going all around the EU saying, don't give them the procedural wiggle room that they need. Don't let them do another year.
Farage.
Apparently, if one other country in the EU says no delay, then there's no delay. So he's meeting with the Italian government saying, don't give the flexibility to Britain.
For those of us who are out of it, Judith, Farage, his position is?
I think he's just
European
gadfly.
What does he want?
Member of European Parliament.
But what does he want?
He wants an exit from. He was the mastermind behind pushing Brexit in the media.
So, and if he's a member of the Brexit Party.
Yeah. If you recall,
yes, he wanted the Brexit, but then when he was offered the opportunity to become part of the body that actually will engage in that whole process, he backed off entirely. Mm-hmm. So he's a fire starter, and then he's just
he's
getting
Trump-ish.
Out of the building.
So this, I mean, the goal, I mean, there will be economic costs. There'll be you'll see unemployment rates go through the roof. It'll be absolute chaos economically, not only in England and the EU, but
you won't get an onion.
There will be contagion worldwide. I think the goal of this is to create chaos, and when you have chaos, it creates power vacuums.
Whose goal?
The hard exit people, the people who want out
Nigel
now.
Nigel Farage.
Nigel, yeah, right.
You say that. So you think that the reason their position on Brexit is there is because they want chaos?
Sure. And that, so you create chaos, and then you strategically align yourself politically with different groups that have been in the background, and then you take over and reinstitute a new form of government.
What's in a name? Bannon Farage.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
It's a new Greek yogurt.
Yeah.
I want it's a new Greek yogurt to be the last phrase said on this segment of the program. So congratulations to you. I'll give you the last word.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Joe O'Donoghue.
Thank you. and to all who celebrate. David Soares.
Or Siraj.
David Soares, Aaron Vicini, Judith Eng, Alan Chartok. Thank you all very much. Have a beautiful weekend. We will be back after this short break.